Welcome to the Banking Reinvented podcast. Every week, we discuss how banks can progressively modernize their customer journeys and model business operations around their customers. You're listening to Tim Rutten, and I'll be joined by Backbase CEO and founder Jouk Pleiter and other senior banking leaders from around the globe. Ready to unpack how to re-architect banking together? Let's get started. Welcome back, everyone, to a new episode of Banking Reinvented, the podcast for changemakers in banking. And as you've picked up on this over the past few episodes, we've been completely focused on AI, especially with also Backbase moving into the AI-powered banking platform positioning that we've introduced a few weeks back. And today we're going to continue the series, and specifically we're going to open up and talk about the software development lifecycle and how AI completely changes the game there. Now, I'm of course not the right person to talk about this, so luckily I have with me Luca Mastrini. Luca, it's really great to see you in the show.
Thanks, Tim.
Good to have you here. And Luca is our global VP of engineering in our services department. And our services department looks after all the implementations globally. So if anyone here in Backbase is well suited to talk about how the software development lifecycle has been transforming with AI, it is Luca. But maybe before anything else, Luca, maybe a brief introduction on your behalf.
Yeah, sure. So thanks for having me, first of all. I'm Luca. I've been working for Backbase for the last 10 years. I have many memories, great experience, huge transformations. As you said, as a global VP of engineering, I'm looking after bringing engineering practices in the software development lifecycle. That means working with all our engineering directors across our hubs and making sure that we deliver software with quality at speed. Yeah. And that's also where I think AI will play a big role in now and in the future.
And that's exactly where we're going to be unpacking. Also, you've been with us for more than 10 years almost, isn't it?
10 years in November. Yeah. Looking forward to the milestone.
Join the club of dinosaurs.
Yeah, it's amazing, yeah.
And you still have all your hair. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, some of them.
Yeah, I'm doing something wrong in this case. But nevertheless, let's dive in. So first of all, Luca, thanks for spending time with us. Because if there's anything that we've heard from the market so far and from also the audience at Backbase Engage 2 weeks ago, the majority loves the AI move and really feels and senses this is the next big wave and we have to make a move. And of course, Backbase is there taking the bold move to go all the way. Secondarily, the majority of our customer advisory board members basically shared, can you share the recipes and the formulas that you guys apply in the software development lifecycle? Because that's where we can start immediately already next to all the other opportunities that we have. So that's also the reason why you're here today, basically to get this episode out because the market is hungry for the knowledge. So maybe to kick things off, Luca, past decade, what have been the major shifts that you've seen in the software development lifecycle?
Yeah, there have been many, but if I have to think to the biggest one, particularly on the engineering side, the technology side, I would say big shift also in Backbase. When around 8-9 years ago, we moved from monolith to microservice architecture. The impact is not just on the technology itself, but if you think about it as an organization, as an engineering organization, all the pieces has to come together. You need to hire talent to be able to build that shift. And as a developer or as an analyst or any figure that plays a role in the SDLC, everything changed because you move from building a big piece of software and deploy that big piece of software in whole application servers into many pieces, and then brings to a big different game to play because new jobs role emerged. Think about DevOps, security, system engineers. That connects a little bit the dot on the second big transformation that I saw, which was all around automating the deployment. Again, I've been a developer myself for many years, and my job was really into get the software, put it there, change some configuration, and go live, production. But with microservices, everything's changed because now you need to have an orchestration layer that really put the piece together and deploys. On the second big wave that is as a consequence, or was kind of in parallel, was the shift from traditional IT to cloud. And the shift wasn't so fast as AI, because if you think about that, the entire tech stack has to change. Your entire landscape has to change. The way that you leverage tooling, the way that you deliver software, all different. And companies have been using, I would say, conservative approach. They didn't go from traditional to cloud native. There was traditionality on premise, cloud first. So let's try to adapt, and then cloud native, reposition your organization completely. And it's all connected, but and I already mentioned it. But then all it comes with transforming your engineering team, and not only the engineering team, because when you build project, you have many personas that play a role, right? And from requirements to development. So what people do you need to hire? So all of a sudden, from going from backend developers with certain knowledge, you have to hire backend developers or developers that knows how to play with certain frameworks that were also into the game for the transformation, and so on and so forth. And then recruitment teams comes into place. How can recruitment team was helping those engineering leads to achieve what I wanted to achieve and to achieve the milestone? So it's it was a big transformation. So 3 years basically. Right?
Multiple shifts there. And maybe to briefly summarize. So essentially the whole microservices movement from big monoliths to unpacked microservices architectures that has changed the game completely over the past decade, which is very true. I still remember that wave profoundly. It was a lot of fun, which then has a trickle-down effect led to new functions or team capabilities such as development operations or DevOps, system engineering, which is a role that really looks after how is your complete SDLC structured, which then got to continuous integration, continuous deployment, basically getting that full CI/CD lifecycle implemented. And then lastly, the actual way from on-prem to cloud, which also had multiple clicks or multiple steps. I definitely recall actually taking pretty monolithic deployment models and putting them on the cloud and calling it cloud, which was not the real move, right? All the way into native cloud, that's been a trajectory of, let's say, 5 to 8 years maybe in total. Not a minor shift. And then, of course, the whole transformation brings to the team structure. How do you think more modular, more composable in a way, which is both the business concept as well as the technical concept? We spoke about this multiple times in multiple episodes. It reminds me of Mayur Vichari, our VP of Value Consulting, who looks after building business cases and basically helping you in your transformations. And he shared, yeah, your composability in the technology is there so that you can have composability in your business thinking. And that again comes to life in this example here, Luca. So thanks for sharing. Now, let's say this story was the story up until 2 years ago, give or take. ChatGPT enters the room. AI becomes a main thing in the conversation. Initially, it felt like a lot of hype, and let's wait and see to a degree. But the change has been relatively exponential, like very fast-paced. Where are you, let's say, at this moment in time when it comes to, let's say, bringing AI into the software development lifecycle?
Yeah, so I would say that till now, the game that we try to play within the organization, but also as an engineering community, was to leverage AI as an assistant. So not looking at AI as an orchestration process, but really how can we help all the personas in, again, in the SLC to leverage the capacity to bring quality in the day-to-day activities. Because if you think about software development life cycle, we are talking about a complex cycle where you have multiple people that speaks a different language. You have engineers that understand technology, but those people without strong requirements won't be able to deliver the right software. So that's very connected to the concept of AI. If you don't have your house in order, if you don't provide the right data set, how can you expect to have the right output? So
you're basically saying you need to feed the AI with proper and clean data so that it can really assist the whatever piece you're looking to execute.
Correct, exactly. And to feed that the AI with the right data, there is a shift in the mentality of people. Because if you're familiar with the shift left paradigm, in quality assurance, if you shift attention to the requirement in the first phase, so you think about AI as a broader topic, not just a piece of technology, not like a piece of software, really something that can be embraced by everybody, then you bring quality at the beginning of the cycle. So, I mean, when we do project, we always start speaking to customer, trying to achieve a mutual agreement on what the scope is, right, to deliver the first MVP. And that mutual agreement is the key point of having a strong cycle, a strong artifact that then would be resulting in your software that runs in production. Mm-hmm. So our view is start with the problem first. As engineering leads, we all look after KPIs, the same one, right? And in a way, get delivery and engineering blended together. We want to have quality at speed. We want to make sure that our teams are efficient, effective. So we have to look at certain aspects, and we need to apply AI and play the game in that role. So not proceed to let's bring everything in. So everything goes at the speed of light today with AI. And the big differentiation, I think, between AI and, for example, the transformation from traditional IT and cloud is that AI builds on top of your existing infrastructures. So you don't change the infrastructure. You apply AI in your SDLC. You integrate AI in your way of working. So that's what we're trying to do, really, to integrate the pieces.
So in a way, you're saying a few things here. First of all, the thinking needs to shift left, meaning start with the problem you're looking to solve and don't just put AI, let's say, very late in the different steps that you have in your full software development lifecycle, meaning clean data, clean instructions, clean mutual agreements that, you know, the AI can also actually work with, which to a degree feels to me like you're instructing your individual engineers with a certain level of input anyhow. So it feels similar in a way, doesn't it?
Correct, but it's a little bit more. I'm not just instructing, we're also challenging engineers and single personas. The way that I think we should build those assistants, those agents, is being intelligent enough, provided with instructions that can really challenge the status quo. Even though your data are correct, as an assistant, I know exactly what I have to produce, because that is what you as a persona, as a human, wants to produce as well. So don't only tell me what instructions are, but make me also challenging the information that you're providing. And then accelerate, in a way, the fail-fast paradigm, because if I can tell you that you're already missing something in the cycle at the beginning, you can immediately go back to your customers, to your team, connect and talk, and provide me with the right information, and then I will help you to accelerate and to create a compelling story. In this case, let's think about user stories, right? That can be unlocked and enable developers to build the right pieces.
So in this case, we're mostly talking, I guess, about the typical manual tasks that you would need to set up an implementation, like user stories, like QA, let's say, tracks that you want to deploy in your SDLC. How about actual coding, like literally having code being developed by and or with an agent? Where are we on that paradigm as an industry?
Yeah, sure. I think it's all connected. And indeed, all the industries today, the world is looking at coding and generation of coding and pieces. Literally, it was November 2024 when MCP was announced.
MCP. So Model Context Protocol.
Correct. And last month or a couple of months ago, I think Google came out with an agent-to-agent platform, development kit. Mm-hmm. So now we are really facing a situation. Buy those tooling and go with the giants that are playing a big role, or build and do something in your organization that fits your purpose. Today, engineers are leveraging tooling, right? We are also leveraging tooling. We are selecting a few tools that can help us in the day-to-day activity to generate the code. But those tooling without context won't work in any organization, because every single organization has its own conventions, guardrails. So what is meaningful in this case is embracing tooling. It can be Copilot, just to mention a few, cursors that are on the hype.
Copilot, cursor, yeah, totally.
But then really augment the generation of software with the context based on your environment. If you have a platform, you know really well how your platform works, and you know really well what you have to generate. So give the platform the context. So you will make those agents and those assistants, those tools, smarter. And with MCP, with the context protocol, you can really be agnostic on any tool that you leverage. Huh? So you shift attention to, again, building the right ecosystem, and then any newcomers, any new tool that will come, will connect. Again, it's an API layer, right? It's will connect to an API layer.
I'm picking up one interesting thing. You said augmenting the engineer. So in a way, we're not yet saying completely replacing the engineer. It augments the workflow that is there, and it almost supercharges the engineer in terms of capability, in terms of quality. Now, devil's advocate, one of the typical topics we also have conversations about is what is the risk involved with augmenting the engineer with AI? Meaning, how do we ensure that the code that is being produced is actually sound, is safe, is secure by design, like that all the illities are taken care of? I see you're smiling.
Yeah, it's a very nice question. Remember, so we have engineering summits every year at Backbase, and when it was last year, 2 years ago, I opened up the summit, and it started with AI. But in the opposite direction, you want to measure the temperature in the room of these engineers. And there was a very nice research that stated that 80% of the code generated was garbage.
80% was garbage.
Throw away.
This is 2 years ago.
2 years ago. Huh? Yeah. Throw it away. And that's because I think the big risk is that you just believe that you can ask for anything and you get what you're expecting. But the reality is that you need to be an expert in the field. You need to know what and how to ask questions to your pair programmer. AI in the context of coding is just replicating the pair programming. So you have somebody that you can rely on and you can talk to validate what you have. Or you have somebody to you can ask, give me the code, let me validate. So there are two people validating, not only because we always listen to the story, code generation and validation done by human, but actually it's a blend, correct? So for me, the biggest challenge in the engineering space is that when you design AI and you design your developer platform, because we are moving toward AI developer platform, of course, you will miss the concept of instructions. Your agent is an expert, exactly like you. So you have to be an expert as well in your field, in your domain, to be able to instruct AI with the right instructions. So it's really about providing the context again. It's really about RAG, augmenting the generation of any LLMs to provide the right artifacts.
1 second. Quite a few definitions here. You said RAG, you said LLM. These are indeed definitions that are being thrown around across the world currently, especially on LinkedIn. You see a lot of stuff flying by. Let's maybe unpack them briefly. RAG.
Retrieval augmented generation is to unpack the acronyms. But the real advantage is that when you embrace, we need to talk about LLMs if you want to talk about RAG. So when you adopt a large language model, and let's mention a few examples, OpenAI or Gemini, those models are based on data collected around industries, but they don't have any information related to your platform. So the big advantage is that instead of training models, which still remain a very cost exercise for engineering teams, you augment the knowledge of those models to make sure that what you generate is compelling to the platform that you're developing around. So that's the meaning of RAG. And then it's a game changer. It really gives you a huge acceleration. You can go twice, three times faster comparing the code generated with or without RAG. Because the effort that you will spend as an engineer will go into prompting the LLM. The first answer is not what you're expecting. Sometimes we can call it hallucinations, but how you can say that the model is hallucinating if you're not providing the right context, right?
So in a way, RAG, so retrieval augmented generation, essentially means that you're going to be infusing the LLM, which is already deeply trained and, you know, has a lot of complexity behind the curtains almost. With RAG, you make sure that the LLM is tuned to what you're looking to achieve.
Correct.
Is that a bit of a layman's way of explaining
that's
it?
Correct. Yeah.
the LLM itself, there's many out there, right? And that's basically where the whole wave of AI started one and a half years ago, that these LLMs were $1 billion in terms of investment to get to an LLM version that you could apply in, you know, whatever context. I think that the market has changed dynamic there as well, right? There's many out there right now at a fraction of the cost where it initially started in terms of accessing them. Like, what's your current view on the LLMs? Which ones are you most passionate about, or at least most close to?
So we run a little bit of experiments. Of course, we always rely on benchmarks. We don't want to beat benchmark ourselves. But as I said, to embrace AI, we always start with our KPIs. And then we said, let's not focus on one LLM, okay? But let's see different personas. Let's also to go a little bit back on the software development lifecycle. What business analysts would like to leverage to generate their user stories? Or when we talk about developers, what is the model that suit the purpose the best? So which one is giving you the highest success rate beside the benchmark, but really in the context of what you have to do? So we have been playing around a little bit with leveraging tooling like ChatGPT that works underneath with OpenAI or with Claude. We don't have an opinion yet. I believe it's too early to say let's really focus on one.
It could also literally change next week with a new release, right?
It can change after this podcast, for example. You go up and you turn up your laptop, you go on internet, you receive newsletter, LinkedIn, and it's a new LLM, and there is a new report that is showing that a company has changed the game. And more than let's pick and choose, it's like, let's experiment. Let's do some labs and see what fits the purpose the most today.
So in a way, you're staying agnostic on purpose and by design.
Agnostic on purpose.
Right? Because you can swap in LLMs as you go along based on the framework that you've set up anyhow.
Correct, exactly. And think about NCP again, model context. Yeah, so you connect tooling to your LLM, abstracting the layer with clients. It's the same concept of any architecture. So let's stay agnostic, let's navigate, let's experiment, pick up what really helps you to accelerate. You don't need to go from zero to hero. You can accelerate from zero to five times, tens, really looking at what is coming up.
Is there anything that over the past, let's say, 3 months blew your mind, like, wow?
Yes.
Give us an example.
Yeah, it's all about SDLC and different personas. When I was as a developer, I was always coding. And I remember 15 years ago, I was reading an article that was talking about TDD, test-driven development, which was really hard to embrace to me, because usually what you do when you get a requirement as a developer, as an engineer, you start coding and you try to build your function, your method. But if you start with test first, you can think about the behavior of your system. And if you think about the behavior of your system beforehand, and all your tests are failing because you have no code whatsoever, little by little, you can turn all your tests from red to green. So you know that what you're building is driven by this how the system has to behave, and it's shifting left to quality on testing, so the code will be more reliable. This is the theory. Now, think about AI and using AI as an assistant. You go in a meeting with the customer, you shout all the details, you have an agreement, you know what you want to build. You know exactly how the application will look like. You also know what the integration patterns are. You know which system you're integrating with, right? It's about building the presentation layer, integrating with external systems. Now, the first personas that play a role in the SDLC are solution architect and business analyst and designer, UX designer, because they have to design the look and feel, they have to explain the behavior of the system, and they have to create diagram component that really set the right expectation in terms of non-functional and functional requirement. Now imagine that I have AI, and we did build this assistant, and we asked the assistant, this is the structure of user stories, this is the requirement in a nice template collected with the customer, Can you please tell me if there is anything wrong, or if not, please generate the output, the user story. And then when you generate the user story, you have the requirements, you have the scope, you have the acceptance criteria, which are what define your behavior. Then we were talking to a QA in the room. Okay, now we generated the acceptance criteria. Can you generate test cases? So you think about it, test-driven development. Yes, it can. Or BDD, behavior-driven development. Yes, it can. Let's see how it plays out. And we create an assistant to generate test cases. Can you compare the test cases generated with acceptance criteria to check if the model is hallucinating? It sometimes happens, of course. So you interact a bit with the prompt and you have the test cases. But then back to 15 years ago when I was telling my story about testing, can you also generate test automation? Of course you can.
The complete flows.
Complete flows. Of course, it's not going to be like generated, run it in production. Not at all. Because although you can generate test automation, test automation is software. Huh? But shifting the software implementation in the requirement phase. So you generate test data. It's always a story when you do API integration. Do you have your API ready? Did you implement it? Can I connect to your system? Can you give me the data? It's always the same story.
Can you give it to me scrambled so it's at least anonymous? So we do use production-grade data to a degree.
Exactly. Now,
to make it real.
And then you go into the definition already that you also need to agree in the requirement phase. Okay, this is ready. I can start once the contract is signed, running. I can integrate. Bam, end-to-end flow. It never happens. Now, at least give me the specs. Let's agree on the specification and I can mock the specs. You can tell, well, but you can mock the specs even in project today, but that's a cost impact.
You have to build it manually.
You have to build it manually.
You have to generate it, yeah.
And you have to deploy it. But if I have the specs, I can generate it. And if I can generate it, I can also generate the test data. Of course, then you have to shift, remove your mock and connect. And then we can think about Big Bang. How this is going to look like. But you're providing the spec up front, you're providing the requirements up front, you're signing a mutual agreement, you have a test automation, and then you unblock developers to build software. So it's a very nice story and it adapts very well with AI because AI is based on state machine, right? That helps you to generate code, but also to handle processes. So the SDLC is a cycle that goes through phases. You can connect the dot. So we were sitting in the room, okay, fine. We're like, this is amazing. Let's empower people. Let's build playbook, the first version, streamline the entire process from requirement, from workshops to test automation. And let's roll it out across the organization. There are other challenges that maybe we can talk about later when it comes to rollout. but to me, it was mind-blowing.
So the wow moment was properly embedding AI as a first principle almost, like shift left, start there.
Right.
What can we really do at this moment in time that's sufficiently mature, right, that can really move the needle? And if I'm listening to you, like, you're super excited about this because you've seen it in real action. You see it today, of course, across our complete SDLC. But if you connect all the dots, then in essence you have, it's like a supercharged way of building out the capability of the SDLC.
You do. That's also the future. But what I like it the most is we can build farms, we can build platform, but the game changer is that you are increasing. I want to go a little bit on the human side. You are increasing the awareness of the work that you have to do. Because the biggest challenge that I always had as an individual contributor, as a developer, as an engineering manager, as an engineering director, was to apply change management into the team. People in organizations always come to manager asking, okay, great, what am I supposed to do? Yeah. Or tell me, or got promoted. Okay, what am I supposed to do now? So, and then you have to explain. Here with AI in the mix, you are enforced to know the way of working. So you are fostering change management in the project team, because if you don't know how to interact with the eye, it means that you don't know what you have to produce. So requirements are not enough. You really need to know your goal.
So is it fair to say, and I'm going to bring this back to layman's terms once more, basically you're putting your engineers in a completely new superpower car, like a Formula One car. Let's just take the example for a moment. You don't easily drive such a car, right? It's pretty insane how to do it. But that's your point, that you're going to be in that car, you're going to drive it, so you need to interact within that ecosystem where you're working with AI, where it's embedded in your SDLC. So in a way, it's enforcing change management because you simply have to, because you're in that ecosystem.
If you don't, you fail because, you won't really be able... You will still accelerate a bit, I would say, but not really at the speed that you can.
Yeah.
So
because you're still interacting with it very traditionally, most.
Exactly, exactly. And then you the behavior aspect, that people by definition, I think. Are you familiar with the Darwin Law?
The Darwin Law.
Yeah. So Darwin says it's not the strong that survive; it's the one that adapt most.
There we go. That's beautiful.
It's all about adaptability. So you need to adapt. You need to reinvent yourself. People are a bit scared today because the change is fast. It's really fast.
And the moment you caught up, something new is coming your way.
You had time before. You don't have time now. You have to embrace it. Huh? So developers, engineers, but really I want to talk about the entire cycle. Every professional that plays a role as a persona in the software development life cycle needs to embrace it. Remember when I was in the room building this flow? I want to have a validation because I'm not a business analyst. I'm not a solution architect. The first reaction when you saw it, what am I supposed to do now?
Do I still have a job?
But you do, because I told them, we are an agile company. We go through many ceremonies. Think about doing refinement planning, which is another big topic that perhaps in the next episode we can tackle. You walk out the room, I would say 80% of the time, without a clear commitment. So you're committing to build some software in a certain period of time, but then you're always late. And then big discussion start. You have to set up some expectation with your customer. Then the project manager will come in. How can we go faster? You reduce quality, you cut the tests. Same this, every lead have been experiencing that. But the point is, interact with AI even in those small events. So learn how to use your assistant to tell you what are the steps that you have to take. So really remind the professional what are the duties, the responsibilities, what should be the outcome in the day-to-day. So that is a little flavor. And to do that, you need to adapt. You need to adapt to learn how to work with somebody else, which is not a human. So in a way, it won't be biased as you might have in humans. So you won't fight with AI. You have to really embrace it. You have to work together and change your mentality. So yeah.
If we, let's say, take a 6 to 12 month horizon, what do you think is going to happen in the near future that will again change the game?
One thing for sure that we didn't talk about is the impact on team structure.
Okay.
So the change is inevitable. It's here. The future is now, actually. The future is now. Huh?
Yesterday.
It's yesterday. So engineering leads will need to learn what skills they will need in the team to spread AI across the SDLC. That's the first thing. We need to actually accelerate. If you look on the market, I don't know how many job roles I saw lately. We are also looking as an organization to change a bit job description, job roles with people that really want to go all in with AI. That's the first change. The second one, it's a big statement, I would say, but I want to mention anyway. We have been talking about agents. We have been talking about AI instructed by humans. So you are teaching AI. We will end up in a situation where they will self-learn without instructions. And the third point for sure is low code, no code, code self-healing. So you spot the defect, you correct the defect, you release full automation
in self-healing.
In the chain. And as a consequence, observability and predictability on the platform to predict what is coming, not to be reactive. So proactivity is the other big word.
Isn't it super exciting, all of this?
It's amazing. I mean, I was talking to some colleagues. I'm becoming AI addicted. I feel like, again, I don't want to go back to 10 years, but I'm Italian. I moved to the Netherlands 10 years ago, and I moved alone. And Backblaze was a big challenge for me. It was a completely new tech stack. But I had passion back in time, I have passion now, and I was spending all my time in learning. And it was exciting as well. So, I hope, what I'm also trying to do inside is telling people, really making people passionate about what is happening and nurture them and explain why they should. That's all.
We're trying to amplify it here with an episode where you're bringing that passion to the table. So thanks for sharing all the different insights. Key takeaway. Going to take a few topics and try to summarize what we talked about today. Of course, the umbrella of the episode was the software development lifecycle powered by AI, actually shifting left and making AI the centerpiece of how you're building out the software development lifecycle. I think what we also uncovered in this episode is that there is quite some maturity already today, and you can literally change the performance, the productivity by augmenting your complete engineering staff that you have with AI and actually reinforcing the change management by putting them into the driver's seat. So it's not, let's do a copilot on the side, let's maybe utilize ChatGPT or Claude, you know, sometimes prompted with a bit of code. No, it's really embedded in your complete workflow. I think that's a key insight that you shared. The second thing that you shared were about a little bit of detail on the fact that instructions are key. Right, so whatever you bring into the models, whatever you deliver through RAG, so the retrieval augmented generation into the LLMs, whatever you bring to the LLM, if it's solid, it's going to be very valuable. If it's not solid, it's probably going to fall flat. It will hallucinate. It will do crazy stuff. So that also alluded to the third point, and that is that the human in the loop, or basically it's AI augmented to begin with, implies that those craftspeople that are engineers, that are designers, that are business analysts, and so forth, they still need their eyes on everything that is happening to ensure that it's delivering what you are looking to deliver, right? And last but not least, we talked a bit about change management. I think this is, I guess, no traditional change management book holds true anymore because the change is stacking, it's exponential. The moment you've done the proper change management, if I may, there's already a new change and, you know, the program that you've built is maybe even redundant, right? So I think there's maybe moreover a call to action to say growth mindset. Nurture people who want to go. Give them the empowerment, the freedom to actually experiment and stay flexible. Stay agnostic to the different tools, the different LLMs, the different capabilities that are out there because every other week there's a new breakthrough. And yeah, that's incredibly exciting, I would say. So anything you would add or highlight, Luca?
Yeah, maybe just to complement the last topic, the last point I want to make is make as an engineering lead a reality check. Are you using AI to solve the problem that you have? Because the tension is on AI today, but the other problems that all every organization are facing, have been facing, won't go away. So can you use AI to solve those problems? So do and run your experiment with ambition, with the North Star of solving the problem in your organization, not just per se running something.
Yeah, so in a way, that's basically saying, take the use cases that will move the needle based on problems that you actually have today. Because otherwise, it's a copilot on the site and an email, use copilot, you don't have a license. Yeah. Nobody really cares, it does not move the needle. Which similarly tells us, it's the same view as we had in the recent episode with Jouk, talking about the AI-powered banking platform. Digital transformation or modernization is still there. You still have, you know, dated systems, they're still disconnected. You still need to drive channels, which at this moment are mobile and web and APIs. That over time might also mature. You still need to bring all of your data together. You still have the integration challenge. Like all of that doesn't go away. And just talk about AI is not the solution. But educating the world on, hey, AI is here to actually massively make progress on this complete domain and transform both your back office procedures as well as how does it end up in the hands of customers? Let's say it's the AI transformation on top of your digital transformation. That's where we're going to really see the industry move towards. And that's definitely part of the series that we're going to be making progress on from here on out. Luca, thank you so much for joining.
Thank you for having me.
A lot of great insights. We're going to hear from the audience whether they liked it. And of course, feel free to drop us a note on LinkedIn. On my profile, that's Tim Rutten, or on Luca Mastrini's profile, as I spelled it out. Having said that, thanks for listening and looking forward to the next episode next week. Thanks, Luca.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Banking Reinvented, a podcast by Backbase. Make sure to follow both Jouk and myself on LinkedIn, where we will be sharing key insights about our journey towards modernizing banking.